All right, welcome to episode 7 of All the Small Takes. I'm Jeff, and John and Cooper are on the line as usual on this Monday night. What's up, guys?
Nothing much. We got some Notre Dame hockey going on in the Frozen Four to look forward to.
Yeah.
And shout out to the Lady Bulldogs of Mississippi State, making it to their first Final Four appearance. And my younger sister is a civil engineer at in Starkville, so go Bulldogs.
Yeah, the Cavs are down 23, so it's been better.
And there's something else we need to point out, I think, at the top of the episode, Jeff. Frank Martin mania has sort of caught on in the mainstream. But back when we did our classy coaches, you had Frank Martin on there originally, and you dropped him.
I did. And I think it's honestly a blessing for Frank Martin that I kept my stink off of him. Because as you heard last week, we might not be the most correct when it comes to predicting anything related to college basketball, although this week was a little bit better. What did we determine? I had 6 out of 8 Elite Eight picks, right? You guys were a little less accurate.
Yeah, the mascot rule did not work out too well.
I had 2.
So yeah, we're going to try to be better for you guys this week. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming back and tolerating us. Quickly, you can hit us up on social media as usual. Let us know what you think of these shows. Instagram, small_takes, Twitter, @smalltakes, Facebook, allthesmalltakes, and Gmail, allthesmalltakes@gmail.com. We're going to jump in this week. We're not going to talk any Final Four because, well, as we said, we're not very good at it. We're going to try to do something a little different. We're going to talk some NBA and then some U.S. soccer. And so we'll jump into the NBA. We're going to hop around to a few different topics. And we'll start with some NBA draft thoughts. I know in light of the tournament and some of the performances, you guys are high on some particular players. And so so whose stock do you guys think went up the most in like the last 2 weeks or so?
I think the guy that every NBA team should be excited about, but I hope none of them are so that the Sixers can grab him, is De'Aaron Fox. I didn't really get to watch too much of Kentucky during the regular season, but I watched his game against UCLA and a game against UNC. He's amazing in both of them. Loved him at the press conference after the UCLA game. And then after the UNC game, seeing him cry in the locker room, it was great. He really, I love the intensity. I love how good he plays. I love how much fun he has and how much time he spends smiling on the court. And I think alongside Joel Embiid would just be amazing to watch and so much fun to have off the court. But you pair him up with Joel and Ben Simmons, Okafor, and maybe we sign Dario Saric, and the Sixers would be unstoppable.
So what does he have to fall to get to the Sixers, though?
Well, I mean, if the Lakers pick stays out of the top three, it immediately becomes ours. So potentially just 4, which I think is doable.
Oh, absolutely. If you look at there's 3 clear guys that'll go above him. Cooper, yeah. you were pretty high on De'Aaron Fox as well.
Yeah, I like De'Aaron Fox. I think his game translates to the NBA pretty immediately because he's going to give you a pretty significant contribution on the defensive end. His athleticism, and I mean, he showed in the UCLA game that he knows how to get to the foul line, which is very important. I think his game isn't that different from John Wall's, where John Wall was at UK. I do think John Wall's a little bit more dominant, though, which is kind of just my general beef, I think, with the NBA draft. And, like, I think we hype these guys up a lot. And honestly, like, I just don't, like, and we say this is a very deep draft class and all this stuff, a very good, talented draft class. And I don't see any player that's, like, out there in college really dominating the game like we have, like, in years past. Like, definitely not on, like, an Anthony Davis level or a Karl Anthony Towns level. So I kind of, to me, when I look at players, and it's very upsetting to watch my teams like draft certain players that they do, I'd rather my teams pick winners over players who are, you know, like maybe have potential, because I think it just translates better. And I'm not like really seeing one dominant player. I am a little hesitant to kind of say who I think is going to be super successful in the NBA.
Well, I think a guy like Devin Booker is a great example of like the inconsistency of trying to project these guys, these once-in-a-generation talents, which are rare, like the Kevin Durants and the Anthony Davises. Like, you do kind of have to look beyond what the pure, like, talent would tell you, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, because I mean, Devin Booker is a great example because he was a sixth man at Kentucky and he dropped 70 points.
Exactly, which is why I think this is a guy I'm super high on, and I honestly wasn't even on my radar until about 3 weeks ago. Justin Jackson at UNC. I think he comps super well to the NBA. I was very impressed with how well he defended Malik Monk yesterday in that game. He had Malik Monk completely thrown off his game. He's a long, athletic guy who can defend a lot of positions in the NBA. He can get his shot off from anywhere. He has this baseline little runner that is one of the harder shots, I think, in basketball. And he's got it down. But even besides that, he's got a quick release. I think he's got a tremendous upside in today's NBA. Do you guys – and I don't know if I've heard him talked about very much in, like, that conversation of studs coming out this year. And he's a junior, too. Like, I think there's something to be said for maturity.
Well, that's probably why he hasn't been talked about as much.
Yeah, because he's older, so I'm not sure how much of the upside that it's there. And, I mean, in recent history, North Carolina is not really known for churning out these great NBA players. You got Harrison Barnes, who's a pretty good role player in the NBA, but, I mean, that's really it. Bryce Johnson came out last year, and he's played, I think, 2 games for the Clippers, and that's it. And then they had a guy named James McAdoo who came out in 2014. He's played, I think, gotten time in most of the games for the Warriors this season. But
I have a hard time imagining Justin Jackson doesn't slot right into some team as like a 3-and-D guy on some team in the NBA.
Team in the NBA could use him because there are some horrible teams in the NBA with horrible gaps in their lineup.
Yeah, and everyone needs that 3-and-D guy. Like the Thunder needed that 3-and-D guy for like 10 years.
Yeah, but is the NBA like incentivizing, which I think is something that's like this is part of the NBA draft, right? These teams aren't – it doesn't maybe make the most sense to go out and get, like, a guy who you know what he is going to be like at the next level. Like, you might be better off, especially if you're, you know, a bottom-of-the-league team, to go maybe take a risk and hope that he's, you know, the next Steph Curry, someone who you haven't really necessarily mapped out potential-wise and turns into be a superstar.
Yeah, I think NBA teams are far more likely to take guys with a smaller body of work than someone – like Justin Jackson, who's played at Carolina for 3 years. And I mean, last year he did not have a great season. He was kind of like in the doldrums or somewhere. And Kennedy Meeks, Barry, and whoever that guy was that hit the buzzer beater before the actual buzzer beater in the national championship game last year. I can't even remember his name. But the three of them
were literally lost to the history. It's a really sad commentary.
But I mean, those three guys were North Carolina basketball last year, and Justin Jackson's come out this year and he was the ACC Player of the Year. But
yeah,
he doesn't have the, you know, the exciting upside that some kid from Croatia or Latvia does, you know.
Yeah, but I don't know but with that upside comes, I think, a pretty significant downside too. So if I were an NBA team, I would be very attracted to someone who I think has shown a little more consistency and stability. But we also want to talk about the NBA right now, not just the draft prospects. And things are kind of getting interesting. I think both of the odds-on favorites, at least who have been the odds-on favorites, have kind of found themselves slipping a little bit. The Warriors, I guess, struggled relative to their expectations, but the Cavs especially have and continue to as we speak. I think they're losing right now. It's by how many points to the Spurs, Cooper?
I'll double check. It's 20 plus.
Yeah.
Are the Celtics playing tonight, Jeff?
Celtics, I don't believe, are
Celtics playing. Celtics are off tonight.
Yeah, but okay, the Celtics have slid right into that one seed for the East. And so maybe, Cooper, with you, what is your alert level with the Cavs?
Oh, my alert level is high. I am stressing out a little bit about it. I think defense is a huge concern. Defensively, they look awful. And pretty much, I think, like, cohesiveness is kind of becoming an issue, too. You have all these guys coming back from injury, Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, and trying to find their roles with new additions, Deron Williams, Kyle Korver. We still don't have a big man to sub Thompson. It's an issue. It's definitely an issue. I think the best thing that is going to happen for the Cavs, I do ultimately think that they are going to lose the top seed East. I mean, I was checking schedules earlier today. The Cavs' next 9 games, not easy. They play at Boston. It's like the third to last game in the season. So I think the Cavs lose that top spot, and maybe that's good for them. Maybe it kind of lowers expectations. They need time. And it kind of sucks that we're 9 games left in the regular season. They need time to figure it out. I mean, I think LeBron can't. If anyone can figure it out, LeBron's going to find a way to figure it out.
True.
Their defense is awful. It's
didn't
awful.
They come? So yeah. Didn't they? Oh, go ahead, John.
I was going to say they've got so they play the Bulls on Thursday, and then you know, quick turnaround Friday night to the scrappy Sixers. Gotta be on an upset.
I will say that's one of the soft parts of the next nine games at Bulls.
Are they almost down 30 points right now?
Yeah.
That alert level is creeping higher for Cooper. But what I was going to say about the Heat, didn't they? So they took the second seed in the East one of those years, the Pacers. Was that the first year they won the title?
I think they took it twice, actually. Yeah. Yeah, LeBron has a history of taking the second seed and, you know, doing stuff with it. I don't think ultimately it matters. I don't think a home court advantage is going to be that big a deal in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't really think so either. And LeBron's always been like kind of a long-term picture, process-oriented guy. But yeah, no, I'm worried. If they don't get their defense together offensively, I think they can put up points. But I don't know.
So we were in one of our first episodes, I think we all locked in some finals picks, and you guys both rode with the Cavs, and I chose the Celtics as my pick. Do you stand by your picks?
John,
do you think the Cavs are still going to get there?
Well, if you recall, I predicted a first-round upset for whoever faces the 8 seed.
Assuming the 8 seed is I'd Philadelphia like to point 76ers.
Well, they're only 8 games out, so they're not mathematically eliminated yet.
How many to play?
And to play, but, you know.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance, which there has not been in the past 3 seasons. So this is a huge deal.
Little victories.
No, I don't think the Cavs are gonna make a push for the one seed, because I think if anything, LeBron is gonna stop playing down the stretch because he's not gonna want to get embarrassed, and he's gonna want to rest himself. I mean, he scratched his cornea the other night, you know, and then got a bizarre hit in the chest that made him fall particularly hard after like a drive to the basket. So I think the Cavs are gonna concede the one seed and pretend that they gave it to the Celtics.
But do you think that the Cavs ultimately end up making it back to the finals?
I think the Cavs ultimately make it back to the finals, but the difference is LeBron James has to do what he did in the finals last year and the Eastern Conference Finals this year.
Guest appearance by a train.
Guest appearance by the Bloomington train, which runs by my window every evening.
Can't make that up.
So yeah, no, I think LeBron's gonna have to go and play hero ball in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they're gonna get to the NBA Finals, and he's not gonna have anything left. He's gonna be running on fumes, and the Warriors are gonna. If the Warriors make it there, actually, the Spurs, I think, are actually going to sweep them aside.
Ooh, in a legitimate sweep, or was that just more language?
You know, that's what I'm thinking about, and I think it might actually be a legitimate sweep, just because I think that the talent on the Spurs, it's like always this sort of distributed all-star talent. They don't have a star talent. The Spurs always have a pretty large roster, and they have a pretty large rotation of guys. And Popovich does a pretty good job of getting enough out of each guy to win enough games. And they're 2.5 behind the Warriors right now.
It helps that they have a player who may very well win the MVP.
Yeah.
Cooper, what do you think about the Cavs?
I'm not shying away from, like, I'm not going to not pick the Cavs.
Good.
Being in the second seed is going to make things a lot harder for them, because they're going to play the Wizards before they reach the Celtics. Wizards are tough. I've been saying that for a while now. I think the Wizards might sneakily, arguably, be the best team in the East, even though their record doesn't say that. I can't bet against the best player in the league, the best player in the past, like, decade of basketball. So I'm going to pick the Cavs in a very tough series against the Celtics.
So I'm still going to stick with the Celtics, but I also, in the back of my mind, I'm kind of abjectly terrified of having to stare down, like, a Game 7, even if it's in Boston. The Celtics... they don't have the playoff experience. I mean, it's kind of that simple. Like, I think that whole core on the Cavs, if it came down to a Game 7 do or die, I would really be nervous for the Celtics' lack of experience, and I would be very afraid of what LeBron and Kyrie collectively would do, especially given some of the flaws the Celtics have matchup-wise, like Isaiah Thomas on Kyrie.
Especially at those positions.
Yes. Yeah. But I believe in the Celtics. I believed in the Celtics a month ago. I believe in them now, and I'm excited to see how the next 2 months plays out. All right, so we're going to move on. We We're going to talk some U.S. soccer. The U.S. men's national team bounced back, and would you call it a must-win?
It was a must-win. Yeah,
yeah, it was a must-win. It was a must-win.
Yep. Yeah. They bounced back 6-0, big win in World Cup qualifiers on well, over the weekend. And it was their first World Cup qualifier under Bruce Arena, right?
Mm-hmm. This is true. And well, so, in the second round of Bruce Arena.
The new Bruce Arena era. And so that kind of begs the question, since they obviously struggled with Klinsmann in those early qualifiers, was it that big of a difference? Like, was he holding them back, or was it just Arena coming in and making a big difference?
So I think, I don't know, we do have to kind of, it's kind of like a wait and see, or at least I'm going to take that approach. Obviously, I think it happens in soccer a lot. Managerial changes lead to pretty much immediate responses. I don't know like why this phenomenon like exists, but it does pretty much across the sport. Playing for a new manager with new tactics and just kind of gives a new energy to the team, and oftentimes can like revitalize seasons. Obviously, the guys responded very well to Arena. It's kind of always been the case with Bruce Arena. His teams have played with lots of energy and lots of passion. And so I am also one to be – I'm very hesitant to be very critical of Klinsmann. I think we knew what we were getting into when we got Klinsmann in the side. He's never known for being this like tactical genius, for making lots of game like management mistakes. We brought him in to change U.S. soccer at a foundational level. And so –
Did he do that, in your opinion? No. In either of your opinion, John or Cooper?
Well, I think he definitely got more talking about U.S. soccer. Maybe it was just like a function of where we were in the national team program with exposure and with, you know, ESPN contracts and Fox Sports contracts. Maybe it was just the fact that he came. But people certainly started talking more about it and have started talking more about it in the time since. But I think getting to what Cooper was talking about, I mean, managers get fired when they neglect some aspect of managing. And it's generally because they've been focusing so much on something else. And so Jurgen came in to do player development because that's what he was known for. And he's not a tactician. And his mortal sin was making these horrific lineups that made no sense and offered absolutely no continuity. And so you go and you hire a guy who does what the other guy neglected. And so Arena is this guy who cares about culture and who cares about excitement and playing with passion, very much emphasizes different things than what Klinsmann did. And so I think, of course, there's going to be an immediate positive change because they've still got whatever Klinsmann gave them, and now they're getting what Arena gave them.
So that segues kind of nicely into the next topic. You mentioned that he was brought in to develop players, and maybe I'm just an ignorant person when it comes to soccer. Like, I don't know if there's a U.S. soccer player like success that I can point to and say that guy came up through the U.S. system and is now the guy on the team. And this guy, Pulisic?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Did I say that correctly? There we go.
Yeah, second close enough.
You got it.
Pulisic. This guy, Pulisic, who you guys are very high on, is maybe an example, but like he didn't obviously make a splash at the World Cup a couple of years ago. He's just now cracking the rotation. So is it a case where we should have to wait a little longer to see some of the fruits of Klinsmann's developmental work, or what do you guys think about that?
Well, so Klinsmann did bring like Bobby Wood into the side, and he brought on DeAndre Yedlin, and he brought on
John Brooks.
He was a big Alejandro Bedoya fan. Like, no one really understood why he had Bedoya in the lineup initially, and it's turning out to be a very good thing. So he did find a lot of these, like, he did find the next generation, and they're coming into the side, and they're getting ready to play. But Pulisic is something special. He's something different from these guys who are good at playing soccer, but this guy is an 18-year-old who is playing in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. Did he score a Champions League goal, or did he get an assist?
Yeah. He scored.
Scored in a Champions League quarterfinal matchup, so his side is going to play in the semifinals. The guy who normally starts ahead of him is injured. So if things happen right, he might get a start in the semifinal also. And this is huge for American soccer. I don't think – have we had a guy play in the semifinals of the Champions League in recent history?
Yeah, so I was actually trying to think about – I think Christian Pulisic is probably one of the most successful already. He's only 18 in terms of international club careers, U.S. soccer players has ever been. Yes, he's. I mean, he plays for a top 10 team in Europe.
What team is that?
And he often finds Dortmund.
Who aren't?
He plays for Borussia Dortmund, and he finds himself in the squad a lot, even though there are players, world class players ahead of him, you know, like Marco Reus, and he'll still find himself in the squad occasionally. against Bundesliga teams and even in their big European matches against, you know, top level competition. He's a stud. Yeah, I mean, I think the only players that come close are Tim Howard and maybe Brian McBride. But then, you know, Brian McBride played for Fulham. Like, he wasn't playing, you know, in Champions League soccer.
Yeah, no, I think this guy could be this one in a generation guy. Like
Freddie Adu.
Like when I was growing, like, no, not like Freddie Adu. I was about to deal with the Freddie Adu, but I'm just gonna move past that now. But like how Landon Donovan and Clint Dempsey have been the face of U.S. soccer for most of our lives. Pulisic is gonna be the face of soccer for our kids, and in 15 years, he's gonna be at the end of his career, and everyone's gonna be talking about what a great thing he was for U.S. soccer. I don't know if we're gonna have won the World Cup. I don't know if we're gonna have gotten to a final. But
yeah, no, I do think in terms of players, I think the future is definitely better than it has been. I don't know if much has changed, like, foundationally in terms of U.S. soccer and youth development. But yeah, I think things look good. I think Bobby Wood's a great player. Pulisic, obviously, we've talked about him. And we've kind of already mentioned, like, John Brooks and Yedlin and Fabian Johnson. And I think these guys that are good and are going to be good for a while. I mean, we're talking about Clint Dempsey being the face of U.S. soccer, and I mean, he kind of showed on Friday night that he's not ready to necessarily, you know, hang up the kit.
Yeah. Oh, no, I love Clint Dempsey. I'm a big fan. But I think another thing that we're neglecting that the Jurgen Klinsmann years gave us is they gave us the voice, the acknowledged voice of U.S. soccer. See, Lawless. Who, again, Alexi, if you happen to be listening, please.
Recurring guest on the podcast, Alexi Lawless.
Recurring guest, Alexi Lawless. Please reach out, and we'd love to have you on.
But yeah, we follow you on Twitter, Alexi.
Hold on. As much as I kind of took the other side of Alexi, like, you know, opinion of Alexi Lawless last, or whatever podcast that was, Alexi Lawless was definitely a thing before Jurgen Klinsmann.
Oh, but
definitely
but
a voice.
But he's ascended in his position soccer. Of like, he's the go-to elder statesman of American soccer. He shows up on ESPN,
yes,
on Fox Sports.
He definitely is, and he's doing a lot for American soccer. Right. But I think we need to give him more credit than just saying that. I think it's just coincidental.
Well, I'm saying that there are all these confluences that have happened in the Klinsmann era. Like
confluences.
Like I think where U.S. soccer has gotten much higher visibility, and whether it's because, you know, we had this German guy come over and coach us, that's not why, but I think that U.S. soccer is stronger because of that.
All right,
Alexi Lawless, please come on the podcast.
Please come on the podcast, Alexi, or at least follow us back on Twitter. It's the least you can do.
Follow us.
quickly, just for those of us who maybe that aren't as big soccer fans, what's the next step for U.S. in the World Cup qualifying? Do we have that?
We play Panama this week. This is another basically must-win situation.
There you go. Cheer on the lads this week against Panama Tuesday. Mm-hmm. All right, so maybe that's how this podcast dropping. You can check out the lads against Panama, but we're going to jump now to a segment, and we're just going to do one segment this week since we run a little long. We're going to introduce a new segment, too. This one was courtesy of Cooper. He came up with this one, and I think it's a pretty cool idea. We're going to do one up, one down. So basically, in the very open-ended, we're going to pick one thing that's trending up and one thing that's trending down. Keeping it general, because as you've learned through our March Madness picks, when it gets specific, we get pretty bad at things. And so we will start with John, and why don't we each do our ups, and then we'll hit the downs.
Ooh, end all on right. A sour note. I like
yeah.
It.
End on a sour note. Well, I'm actually going to kind of be flipping that narrative, because you guys know what's up right now. Hyper-consumerism and junky weather. That's what's on the upswing right now.
Wait, what did you call the weather?
Junky weather.
Is that a Mississippi thing?
No, like, it's just, you know, things that are bad are junky. It's junk. Things that are junk are junk. So we're at that funny spot where the seasons are changing, and what we get is a bunch of cold rain and mud. So loving that. That's just great. That's in the upswing. Relativism and hyper-consumerism. There's been a lot of talk about truths and false news and all these other horrible things, but I think the biggest
sad
issue, yeah, sad. Just it's all sad. but the biggest problem is that this hyper-consumerism is on the rise again, and we see it in the NFL, and we see it in relocating a team for absolutely no reason. The only rationale they can give is, oh, we want a new stadium. And it's like, that's a terrible reason to move your franchise there, because you want the public dollars to be spent on constructing these palaces that are outdated in 5 years. which you then need to build another one. And so the NFL is perpetuating a fraud on the American people by inculcating our youth into this culture of hyper-consumerism. All you need to do is be entertained. And it has that ultimately there is no connection to your community, no connection to you as an individual or to your collective family, friends, or community atmosphere. We need to figure out a way to stop the NFL, to destabilize the NFL ownership and return it more to the people. Like we need to federalize the NFL. And I don't mean that by having the federal government take them over. That would be a horrible idea. What I mean is developing a more federal system where the individual teams have far more power over the league office and the individual teams are far more localized in their local communities. So that's what's up this week, guys.
Oh, just that. Okay. Well, that was a lot. I don't really have anything to respond to. Cooper, do you, or you just want to jump right
no,
to Europe?
No, I'm going to, I think, talk about something that's going to hit home with more of our, you know, the greater majority of our five listeners, which is, I think frustration with the Patriots is definitely up. I think it's probably at a close to a like near all-time high. It's unbelievable the offseason that the Patriots have had after winning a Super Bowl. The rich have gotten richer. It's annoying. That's all I have to say, really.
Well, and apparently the Patriots are more effective at law enforcement than, I don't know, the Texas State Rangers and all this other host of organizations where they finally managed to get Tom Brady's, what, two Super Bowl jerseys back that were stolen?
Yeah, and like Von Miller's helmet. Like this guy was hoarding.
Yeah, there was this journalist was stealing things from Super Bowl locker rooms.
But I welcome the Patriots hate because it's no one's fault but the rest of the leagues. Like we're not playing by a different set of rules.
I know.
Oh, but you are. No, I mean you're just recording other people's practices and using them and deflating footballs and
we cannot go down the Deflategate rabbit hole. I refuse to let it happen. Brady has been exonerated by science. That is it.
See, this is relativism at work, Jeff. You are denying objective truths.
We cannot talk.
Numbers
about
don't lie.
We can't do it. All right, I am going to jump to my up to get us away from that. But I'm going to stay in the New England region, and I'm going to stay with someone who I've mentioned before on this podcast. It's Pablo Sandoval. And contrary to what John said earlier, what's up is not his weight. What's up is him batting .351 in spring training with four taters and 19 RBIs. Looking slim and trim and ready to lead the Boston Red Sox onto the field in a week for opening day. I am very up on Pablo Sandoval.
All right. With that, can I just segue into my down? Totally. Because you just gave me the perfect segue. Sure. The fact that Jeff just quoted spring training statistics has reminded me that June, July, and August are coming. And it is always a reminder that those are just the worst sports months of the year. The time where all I have to think about is baseball and I wake up to world transfer news in terms of soccer and it's just so dull and so boring. And I think this year at least I have something to be thankful for and the fact that Game of Thrones has now moved its start date. So I will at least be able to watch it during these months.
Yeah, my down is objective truth and non-materialism. But that goes without saying.
What are these words?
What I'm articulating instead is knees are on the down. You know, sell on knees. This is the season where everyone tears their ACL or their MCL or their UCL. Or in Louisville's case, they pop their shin out of their leg on national television.
Why do we go there?
Joel Embiid had his knee surgery, so he's not going to be walking around for a bit. Breonna Turner, the center for the Notre Dame women's basketball team, injured her knee. It's a bad season for knees right now. So if you are a knee, maybe just take a mulligan and start again in April.
Shout out to all our knee listeners. also, not why did you make me think about that injury again?
I'm sorry.
All right. My down, to wrap this up on another sour note, is the Columbus CBS affiliate. So Sunday evening during the UNC-UK game with about a minute left, the tornado sirens began to go off here in Franklin County, Ohio. And when the tornado sirens go off, the local news channels, typically jump to weather. What they tried to do, the CBS affiliate, was split screen basketball weather. Instead, we got no screen. It was blank. And at precisely this time, I took to Twitter because I was very obviously interested in the end of the UNC-UK game. And I saw Twitter collectively losing its mind about, well, what? I don't know, because I cannot see anything on television. And by the time I was able to get my computer open and get to the live stream online, the game was over. It was actually like those stupid ads that they run where like the power goes out and it's like, oh, what happened? But playing out in real life.
There was no Kansas fan to save the day.
Yeah, there was not.
Ironically enough.
And to top it all off, there wasn't even a tornado.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
that probably is enough. Yeah, that's enough.
Yeah, probably enough.
Which is good. Oh my gosh. All right, we'll move into the last segment, the segment we end each week with, the traditional waste of data for the worst take of the week. And I'm going to start this week because I think I'm going to rile one or both of you up with this one. So awesome. On Saturday night, Celtics and the Suns played, and the Celtics won, and Devin Booker scored 70 points. And after the game, Devin Booker and his teammates posted a nice little picture on social media with them holding a nice little good job, good effort, 70-point little piece of paper. And Isaiah Thomas had a very nice and I thought very, very witty response on Instagram saying, we're playing for the playoffs, they're playing for the lottery. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. And I thought it was, I don't know, it didn't hit me the best way that the Suns were celebrating a loss. Even though what Devin Booker did was impressive.
Okay, so I'm mad at you for so many reasons. I can't believe you just stole my waste of data. Secondly, only a Boston sports fan would be like mad for the Suns, who literally like the most ironic name because nothing they have seen this year has been sunny. And only you could get frustrated with them for celebrating the most important thing that's happened like to them all season, which is impressive. Devin Booker scored the most points scored by any active player in a single game in the NBA. And like, that's all they have this season. And you are just like over there sipping on your like superior Kool-Aid that's just like dribbling all over your like long, fancy like beard. And it's just like so frustrating because what he did is impressive. And why can't Isaiah Thomas, instead of saying that like nasty Instagram post and pretending to be all tough like they're like, you know, the bad boy Pistons from the 90s, which they're most definitely not, because no one's scared of Al Horford. All right. So like, why can't you just say like, hey, that was a good game. Like Isaiah Thomas, you won the game. Like there's no reason for you to be frustrated. None. All you had to do is say, yeah, that was impressive and move on.
I think this is a prime example of East Coast Boston Celtic elitism. It's pervading our culture and it's bizarre. Like, why does Isaiah Thomas care? He's being a bit of a baby, and the Celtics themselves are being bits of babies because they feel like they're not being patted on the back enough for being one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference.
They're not.
Look, at the end of the day, if they wanna be taken seriously and taken as contenders, then they should go out and they should beat everybody.
Yes, winning is all that matters, which is why
they shouldn't get into these little ticky-tacky fights.
With the Suns.
With the
out
Suns.
Out of all teams.
Okay.
A fight with Jahlil Okafor in his rookie year for absolutely no reason. the Sixers were still tanking. Like, we're kind of still tanking now, but we were definitively in tank mode last season.
Like, find an opponent who matters.
Yeah.
Whatever.
They got into a fight with the Wizards. I mean, they get into a fight with their fans. It's like, I don't understand what's going on in Boston.
Just fight anyone.
I love the chip on the shoulder. And all I'll say is that for a podcast that talks all about relegation and winning, you should be rewarded for winning and we shouldn't encourage tanking, why are we celebrating a team that lost?
I'm not encouraging tanking.
I never said
just
we
like
shouldn't
celebrate
encourage
an individual feat. That's all they have to cheer for. That's it. Just like, let them have it.
All right. Whatever. We'll move on to Cooper.
Okay, so my initial waste of data before you stole it was Isaiah Thomas's Instagram post. But I also find it ridiculous that the Sacramento Kings, and this is just, I think, a waste of everything, money, time, just everything, that they are interested in pursuing Sam Hinkie into persuading him to take a front office job. And first of all, like, where's, like, there shouldn't be any persuasion involved in that situation. Because I think if I were Sam Hinkie and I got approached by anyone about any job in an NBA front office, I'd probably be very glad to take it, because I honestly do not know how anyone in the league wants him anywhere remote, like even in their city. I just don't get it, because he's the master of tanking. Like, we still haven't seen that what the, like, 76ers have done is going to be successful. It took a horrendously long time to manage. It blows my mind. I just think it's absolutely ludicrous.
I think Sam Hinkie is one of the great modern general managers in NBA history. No one else has orchestrated a better than he has. The Celtics never went into rebuild mode, so I'm not counting them. But every other
the Cavs,
team that has tried to rebuild
after losing LeBron.
Oh, the Cavs didn't rebuild. They just convinced the NBA colluded with them to give them two number one overall picks. Mm-hmm. And then they convinced LeBron to come back home.
I'm super here for the NBA lottery conspiracies, by the way. I'm super here for that.
Balls in the freezer, and then when you dump them in,
just grab the cold one.
That's all you have to do.
Let's go. We're going to turn into an InfoWars podcast for the NBA.
But seriously, though, Sam Hinkie did what he was hired to do, and he didn't lie to anyone about it. He laid this out. He said, look, we are going to intentionally lose. We are going to sell everything. We're going to be very open about it. We're going to hire a coach, and we're going to tell the coach what we're doing, and we're going to keep him on for the long haul. And when we come out of it, we're going to be a dynasty. We are going to be primed to be contenders for a long period of time.
Using the D word.
I mean, hopefully I'll be wrong, like, about the 76ers. I don't see it. I don't think it's going to happen. Until, like, that process proves me wrong, I don't see why Sam Hinkie should have a job. And if you want your team to win for the next 5 years, and the most exciting part of your season is watching balls fall out of a bin into your, like, where you fall in the lottery, then sure, by all means, Sam Hinkie's your guy.
Cooper, 3 years from now, the Sixers are going to be vastly superior to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
All right, John.
Okay, so my waste of data is actually going to – I'm going to be flipping it, and I'm actually going to be shining a light on good, upstanding individuals. And in this case, it is the Miami Dolphins. They are the only team that voted against the Las Vegas relocation, and their owner has gone on record lambasting his fellow owners, saying, any of you guys who think you need to take public money to build your stadiums are fools. And not only that, but you're perpetrating frauds. You're idiots. Don't say the I word. I applaud the Miami Dolphins for doing this. So, yeah.
And on that note, that's the show for the week. Thank you guys for tuning in. You can reach us on social media to let us know what you thought of this week or any of the weeks prior. Instagram, @small_takes, Twitter @small_takes, Facebook, @allthesmalltakes, and Gmail, allthesmalltakes@gmail.com. Leave us a review or write us an email. If you're funny or complimentary, we will give you some shout outs. And until then, we will be back next week with some reactions to college basketball and some more of our outstandingly accurate takes.
Dope.